You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, coming up after midnight. It is Music Monday, and Fridays we do something that I'm very proud of. We do something called the Budget Crisis Corner. Every week we've been inviting a legislator, senators and representatives, one from each party. Last week we had Senator Biss and Representative Patty Ballock on the show to give us their philosophy, their point of view on what's going on in Springfield, how do we get out of this mess. And they, you know, I think that there's one person who probably sees it from a different point of view, and that is the treasurer of Illinois, Treasurer Mike Frericks, who joins us in studio right now. Thank you so much for coming down late.
Patty, happy to be here tonight.
I appreciate this.
I think a couple weeks ago, I was listening to you interview Rob Martwick.
Oh, yes.
And that's what got me the idea. I said, I want to come on and talk with her like Rob does.
You can come on. You can come on as often as you want. I know you've been traveling a little bit, and I wanted to make sure that we figured out what we were doing with our conversations with the budget crisis as well. Was one of the reasons I kind of put it off for a week or two, because I'm trying to understand where everyone's coming from, and I've tried to steer everyone away from the finger pointing, because I think that you more than anyone else knows that's not going to help any of us.
It hasn't yet.
No. What do we stand? Okay, people are, and I read this in an interview with you or some comments that you made. That people aren't, they don't understand that the longer we go, it doesn't seem like that big of a deal. Well, we've made it a year without a budget. What difference does it make at this point? What does a difference make?
Exactly. I've been talking this last week and last several months about the consequences of lack of a budget. You know, we talk about the social service agencies will be shutting their doors, but there are all kinds of unintended consequences that create this vicious downward cycle.
Okay.
So as I tell people, my office is a revenue generating office. For every dollar we spend, we bring in $28 to the state of Illinois. But because we have no budget, we have no plan, we don't know when money is going to go out, my number one responsibility is to make sure there's funds available to pay bills. If we don't know when the money is going out, we can't invest for the long term. And everyone who has a simple savings account knows you put money in a savings account, you make little to no interest. You put money in a CD, you make some more interest. If you put money in a longer term CD, you make even more interest. So we figure it out, because we're not able to make as long term investments and we don't have a higher yield, how much money we're losing out on and missed opportunity costs. That's about $2.6 million a month.
Okay. And that's going to add up. And has that been the number since this crisis, since the deadline last year in May?
Well, so once the crisis began, there was no budget, we had to begin changing our portfolio. So it didn't happen overnight.
Of course.
But starting looking from January in the first quarter, we realized we probably could have, if we had kept a similar investment approach, an additional $2.6 million a month. Now, for those people listening, that's not going to solve our budget problems, but it makes the job of the General Assembly ultimately that much harder. Because when they do get around to passing a budget, that is less money that they're going to have. That is more money they're going to need to raise in taxes, or deeper cuts they're going to need to make in things like education.
And nobody wants to make cuts. Where do you stand? And when you mention education, where, because the finger pointing seems extreme right now. And you mentioned off the air that I had spoken to Representative Robert Martwick. And today he wrote a small piece about the finger pointing is going to be destructive on all sides. Blaming Chicago and saying that we're just bailing out Chicago. This is good if you live in Chicago. And then Chicago getting mad right back. Well, what, you know, we bring in so much money when it comes to our revenue, when it comes to tourism, you know, the amount of the just the property taxes here alone for our, we're trying, but that gets dispersed throughout the state. So does it seem, do you get the sense that now it's us against them, Chicago against the rest of Illinois?
Well, I think there's a lot of people looking to blame someone else. And
yes.
So frequently it's Democrats blaming Republicans and the governor blaming Democrats. But you saw the governor when he went around his tour around the state pitting parts of the state against each other.
Right.
And I don't think that does anything to move the ball forward. I understand there is a element of campaigning in serving in office.
Mm-hmm.
But we have campaign season, and that season ended.
But
and it's time to start governing and sitting down and working with these people. And it's easier to work with people when you're sitting down at a table talking to them rather than running around the state and calling them names.
But just today, did you hear that he said he will run for another term? Which I guess he's already gearing up. Maybe that's part of why he's touring. Maybe he's trying to get to know different parts of the state even better so he knows where to come back to and say, I still didn't get the budget done. You mentioned that the job of the treasurer's office is to generate revenue. So let's start there, because I think that people wonder about, and this has come up, the office of the comptroller and the office of the treasurer. Can you explain the differences in your responsibilities?
So very simply, the comptroller controls the checkbook.
Mm-hmm.
The comptroller pays the bills.
Okay.
We've not been doing a lot of that lately, but that's the job of the comptroller. The job of the treasurer is to invest that money while we have it. So people will frequently say to me, wow, what an easy job you have. Your job is to invest money for a state that has no money. And right. I have to tell them that, yes, our general revenue fund doesn't have a budget. And that means we can't pay an awful lot of bills. But there are over 700 different state funds with specific purposes. And all those funds add up to about $12 billion in assets the state of Illinois has. We also help municipalities with an additional $5 billion. And we also help families save for their kids' college education to the tune of about $8 billion.
And that's the 529, the Bright Start program, correct?
Yeah. It's a great program, and we're going to do some great things to help other families out there make sure their kids have a bright future.
And we also, I was with you last year for a press conference, and the photo made it look as though I had fallen asleep. I was actually just trying to listen to what you were saying and hope to sort of, you know, weave it into the comments I wanted to make about, it was a 529s for parents who have children with disabilities, and I don't think many people are aware of that. How do people find out more information about making sure their children's future is secure?
Well, they're not that aware of it because it is a brand new idea that has not been set up yet in the state.
It is not. Okay.
No.
So is that held up at all by the budget or no?
No, it could be. Mm-hmm. It could be. But right now, we've had 529 plans for a while, and families have come to understand what these are. If you want to give your kid a brighter future, you can put money aside in these accounts. The investments can grow tax-free as long as they're used on education-related expenses.
And for the state of Illinois, so let's since you said the other one's not set up yet, and we will make sure that we follow that, and when it's available for people, they have the information.
Well, I'd love to give people an idea of what's going on here. And there's also an example of how you can get stuff done with people who disagree with you. So in 2014, Congress, who does next to nothing, finally got together and passed legislation to create these ABLE accounts. It stands for Achieving a Better Life Experience for parents out there whose kids maybe aren't going to college or a trade school. Those mm-hmm. who have a profound disability, their parents still want a brighter future for them. And a lot of those parents are scared, what happens when I'm no longer here?
Right.
So we're going to allow parents to put money aside. It can grow tax-free. And up to $100,000 won't count against your federal limits. This brings a lot of relief for a lot of parents who are just worried. They're eaten up about what happens if my son or daughter outlives me.
And that was one of the things that I had mentioned at your press conference was that it's kind of the unspoken and sometimes spoken truth mm-hmm. that many parents feel when they have a child who they know will never live independently, as my son Declan will never, and he lives a wonderful life and we love being with him and we always will. We just know we worry about because we love him so much and we get him and he seems to inspire that from others. Everyone seems to be drawn to him, but you imagining not being there and making sure that you're the person that keeps him safe is hard. And we often say we can't die first. Yeah. And so let's go back. This gives us a little bit back into the social services. I do think that as many agencies are not being paid, there were many places that are already closing their doors. I know the Lutheran Social Services, I believe, had to close their doors. Catholic Charities have said that they are in desperate need of being paid.
Yeah.
And when parents, so when we use the words, I can't die first, when that's already a seed that you have, it can lead to really dire situations. And I do believe that the woman who took the life of her adult daughter, who had cerebral palsy in Schaumburg, I do believe there came a moment, and I talked to people in Springfield who said that she had been alerted and been told that she was losing services. Mm-hmm. And there are stories like that happening very quietly throughout the entire state that people can't ring the alarm bell because they are already desperate. They're in quietly, you know, dying. I mean, there's no other way to put it. And we talked about this last year. That's not the way to count those families and say, was it a direct result? But we know that there are people who are losing hope.
Yep.
So how do we, and I know that you've been going around and telling people and trying to, because we had a downgrade last week. How is that going to affect our future in Illinois?
That downgrade cost the state of Illinois tens of millions of dollars. Tens of millions of dollars that could have been used to fund important social services for people with disabilities or fund education. You know, I recommended get a budget in place first. That credit downgrade was mm-hmm. a direct result of not having a budget. That meant we paid a higher interest rate. That meant more money was going to Wall Street than it is to Main Street here in Illinois.
What do you say to people who think, well, we can't just have a budget just for the sake of it? We have to, you know, we have to have the reforms. Now the governor has come down to, I think, two reforms. He said last week it changes which ones are the most important. Now it's about mapping fare mapping and term limits. So that's the one last week. And then before that, it was. And then he says in private, there are Democrats. And I've talked to a lot of Democrats. I don't know which ones privately agree on workman's comp and some of the other ones. What, you know, do you have thoughts on, well, we have to get these reforms done first and then we can talk about a budget?
Well, I think we've been talking about these reforms for well over a year. And there's not been agreement.
Right.
And I think that Governor Edgar made it clear when he said the number one priority of government is getting a budget in place so state government can function. It's been functioning. It's been held together with duct tape and baling wire. But that can't go on forever. And you're seeing real consequences. Like, we're bringing in less money. Institutions of higher education like the University of Illinois are losing top-tier faculty. There are parents in the state who won't send their kids to a state school because they don't know if the doors will be open right. in the next 4 years. And that becomes a vicious cycle. If we're not educating our students, if we're not keeping them here in the state and they're leaving the state, it's not going to hurt our budget next year. But for years, if we lose out on that talent, if we don't have a well-trained workforce, it is going to hurt Illinois decades from now.
But that's intangible. I mean, I think that people are like, well, we've, you know, it's been 20, 30, 40 years of mismanagement and corruption. And, you know, if we don't do it now. But to me, that seems like holding everybody hostage to do something that might be unsolvable in this manner. I mean, if it's solvable as far as the way things are, whether it's the pensions or the way the city of Chicago's schools are managed, that's separate from the budget and what you're talking about as far as budgets, the investments. Can you stay for a little bit?
Sure.
We have you blocked out till midnight. I think we told all right. your folks that. We are talking to Illinois State Treasurer Michael Frerichs, and you can give us a call or text us with any comments, concerns, questions, 312-981-7200. That's both our phone and text line, 312-981-7200. More after this on 720 WGN. It's pretty late. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. We are joined by the Illinois State Treasurer, Michael Frerichs. And I hope I'm not, I didn't mean to hit that like in a weird accent. Frerichs, is it a French name?
It is not. Although people who speak French, I tell them it sounds like Frère and Frère Jacques.
Right.
But it's German.
German. And you were speaking Russian. You mentioned that you also speak Chinese, Spanish, and German, I'm guessing?
Yeah, I lived in Taiwan for a couple of years, and so I picked up Chinese for people who have seen me. If they think I'm tall in this country,
so tall,
they should see me in Taiwan.
What are you, good 6'7", 6'8"?
6'8". 5'20".
That's a bit.
80 inches.
It's a lot. It's a tall dude.
203 centimeters.
There's a picture of us that I'm going to post in a little bit at a press conference, and it looks like I'm sleeping, but I was just trying to concentrate. But I was wearing 5-inch platforms, which puts me at about 5'11", and I just come up to your shoulder in the photo, so it just kind of cracks me up. We were talking, and I invited our listeners to join the conversation. We'll talk a little bit more about unclaimed money. First, Matt had a question. Matt, how are you doing?
Good evening, everyone, and
evening.
Almost good morning, Mr. Treasurer.
Good evening slash morning.
Yes.
I hope you guys get to go to sleep. Actually, I hope I get to go to sleep soon. Anyway, quick question for you. In the past 48 hours, there was a school in Chicago that made the news because they had announced that they had to close down and that they were not going to be opening up at the beginning of next year's school term. If by some miracle, which I'm going to be quite frank, I'm not holding my breath for, the state manages to get a budget, would that school be able to reopen, or is that just going to end up being an abandoned building from this point on?
Well, first, let me ask that, Mr. Treasurer, because I like the way he said that. I haven't figured those things out. I like the way that sounded. Matt handled that very well. Mr. Treasurer, does the state of Illinois Treasurer's Office have any functions with the charter schools in our state?
Just about zero.
Okay.
Is the school you're talking about a charter school that will close? Is it a public school that will close? And really, I don't know the.
I didn't mean to interrupt. My apologies. I was just going to say I'm 95% sure it's a public school.
Oh, it's a public. Do you want to tell us the name of the school?
Honestly, if I could remember the name of it, I would have said it. I'm sorry.
Are you talking about the Galapagos Charter School? It's in Humboldt Park.
Yes, there you go. It is a charter school.
Yes.
Okay, so you'd seen news about that. Yeah, it sounds as though the treasurer's office doesn't really have
Yeah,
much
we
of
don't.
A relationship.
So the General Assembly and the governor are in charge of passing a budget, and they allocate funding for different schools, for charter schools, for public schools. There's a very complex formula that allocates money throughout the state. But then it's up to those individual school boards, their governing agencies, to decide if they have enough money for the year or if they can rely on the state. I mean, the big question is, right now the governor wants to pass a stopgap budget. What that means is a six-month budget. And that sounds nice. It's better than what we've had. We've had zero budgets. However, if you are operating a school, you don't operate schools on a six-month calendar. You operate them, you know, throughout the year, or at least 9 months spanning in the course of a year.
I was wondering about. I was going to ask you about the bridge budget they've been talking about. Thank you, Matt. Sorry we couldn't help you out more with that
question. I'm sorry about that, Mr.
No, no apologies. It's all, we like taking questions. We're glad that you joined the
conversation. And I love your show, and have a great night.
Thank you, Matt. You too.
But it's really tough for a school to plan if you say, well, we've got enough money to get you halfway through the year.
Mm-hmm.
I need to hire teachers and set up for a full year. Well, maybe we'll come back and we'll take care of you in the second half of the year. It's really tough to plan to do that. And so it doesn't surprise me that some charter schools say, without any certainty, if we don't know if we can actually employ our teachers throughout the year and educate our students throughout the year, we're just not going to open our doors.
It doesn't seem to make any sense. And how does it affect you if you had a six-month budget or a bridge budget, I guess? Because you were talking about investments and what you're able to do, short-term or long-term investments for the state of Illinois.
Well, in some ways for our office, a six-month budget would be improvement because mm-hmm. right now we just don't know. But we're relying on a lot of court orders. I tell people in our office, we have relationships with financial institutions. Most of the banks in the state still want to do business with the state, even without a budget. We need to use our computers and our phones, and because the power companies and the phone companies are regulated by the state, they haven't cut us off. And because
right.
courts have ordered that my employees have to get paid and state employees have to get paid if they show up to work, my employees show up, we're able to function better than, say, a social service provider like Lutheran Social Services or a university like Chicago State or Eastern Illinois University.
Because those checks stop coming. Some of them haven't been, some haven't been paid since last spring, I believe. And this year it's been very tough for them to get paid on time. We have Muriel. Am I saying your name correctly?
Muriel.
Hi, Muriel. This is the treasurer on the line with you.
Yes. I'm interested to find out. You're saying bills are not being paid. We have no budget. Yet all these tax revenues, quarterly for businesses, weekly for payroll deductions, all these monies are coming into the treasurer's office. We should have a big pile of money piled up there, shouldn't we, if bills are not being paid? What's happening to all this
question.
Money that's coming into the state?
Well, as I said, we manage about $12 billion. It's spread out over hundreds of different funds. The fund that most people refer to as state government is our general revenue fund. And there, money is coming in from tax collections, but money is also going out. It's going out because the courts ruled that employees have to be paid. So that money is going out.
And there's also money going out with court decrees when it comes to many services.
Yeah. So the courts have ruled for Medicaid funding, Medicaid spending, you've got to pay for children. And so that money is going out. The governor did sign a budget to fund K-12 education. They've come back and they've signed lots of mini budgets over the course of the year to make sure we can spend other money out there. But the problem is that most of that money goes out, but we haven't really reduced our spending in the past. And so it's matching the revenues, and that's why some of these bills are piling up. Some of them pile up because there's just not enough money in the account. You got to wait for some more money to come in before you can pay them down. And some of the bills are piling up because the comptroller can't pay them. Legally, can't pay these bills
without a budget
in place.
Right. Does that make sense, Muriel?
Well, it still seems to me that there should be some excess money if bills are not being paid.
Well, the temporary income tax expired last year, and that took about $5 billion in funding away from the state. And so, yes, so some of those bills are piling up, but there's less money coming in as well. Money is coming in, but it's less than was before, and spending has not really been curtailed that much.
Why is it less than before? Is unemployment up or
no? Because the tax rate went down, Muriel. It expired and it went down from 5% to 3.75%, and that meant a loss in revenue of somewhere around $5 billion.
And now they have not been able to approve any further revenue generating legislation.
Okay, well, we're retired, so we don't see that you know, we don't see that, you know, deduction in state income tax because we don't see any.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Muriel.
Thank you, Muriel.
Appreciate it. And before we, here we go, because we were going to come back to the idea, and I know Roger's working on some news, but he can hear the information about claiming on money that is owed to us, I guess, if maybe he didn't pick up a check.
And maybe owed to him, and maybe we need to make that process a little easier so that he makes it through the first couple of pages and we get it into his hands.
I know. I have the paperwork. Jane, do you have the paperwork? Do you have a money claim?
It's Jan.
Hi, Jan.
Yes, hi. Hi. I have an iCash situation.
Okay.
And I was married in 1956, Maricopa County, Arizona.
Okay.
And I'm having a problem since February sending in to get my money that I found out I was owed. My parents took out an insurance policy on me for Prudential.
Okay.
And I've proved everything so far, but Maricopa County cannot give me a marriage license, duplicate or whatever it needs to be, and also a divorce decree when I was divorced in 1960 out there. I'm not able to prove my maiden name from that. I was wondering if I could send in my children's birth certificates. I have copies of them with the maiden name and my married name on it.
Jan, I think that the treasurer might be able to break this down a little bit.
Well, I think, Jan, if you'd be willing to share your contact information with me off the radio.
Yes, Craig will take your information.
Yeah, we'll take it. We'll reach out to you and we'll deal with some of those issues. You know, I'm hesitant to ask for any more information online because
a couple of times already and nothing. It just keeps coming back that we have to have more proof, you know, who I am and all that.
Okay. Well, we'll try and work with you. I'll make sure my staff follows up on this. But at the same time, we want to get money out into people's hands. I firmly believe that putting money into your hands so that you can spend it in your local community does a lot more good than does sitting in my vault. However, we also need to make sure that we are sending the money to the person it belongs,
right. And
that there aren't people pretending. I mean, we hear talk an awful lot about identity theft. Some of this information is available online, and we know there are people who go online, look through, try and find someone with the name, and then come and try and impersonate them to get that money. So we need to have strike a nice balance here where we make it possible for you to collect your money, but not someone else to steal it from you.
Jan, good luck.
I agree.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Craig will take your information in just a moment. And she brings up a point you had mentioned off the air about insurance policies that are also unclaimed. How can people find out if someone took out a policy in their name?
Well, right now, it's really difficult. If someone took out a life insurance policy and named you as a beneficiary but didn't tell you, there are hundreds of life insurance companies out there. You can't call through every one of them and say, did someone name me?
Right.
But I think what most people assume when their loved one dies, if they had a policy, someone will contact them if they're a beneficiary.
Right.
They have been mistaken. Most life insurance companies for years would not reach out to beneficiaries. They would wait for beneficiaries' heirs, family members, to contact the life insurance company. Now, that seems all very nice and good if you're married and you tell your spouse you're my beneficiary and they know vice versa. But sometimes you'll have a single parent who will die with young children or two parents die in a tragic accident. You can't expect those children to know about life insurance policies and know how to get a death certificate and go out to the life insurance company and collect. And so what we found a few years ago was these life insurance companies were sitting on billions of dollars of unpaid death benefits for people who had already died. So we reached an agreement with 20 to 24 so the largest life insurance companies then. We began auditing them, checking to see if they had any policies sold for someone who had died. And what we have discovered is we have directly returned or collected over $500 million for people in the state of Illinois. Directly returned over $300 million to people, and $200 million come in, and we're working hard to get that out. And it's individuals, and some people list their church.
Right.
They say, when I leave, I want to leave something behind for my church, but they don't run and tell their pastor, look at me, what a good Christian I am. I'm leaving something for my church. They think it'll be a surprise, something they leave behind. And we found some churches that had no idea they're beneficiaries, and we're now reuniting them with money that was meant for them.
What should you do then? How do you make sure that people get the paperwork that they're supposed to have when they take out an insurance policy for someone?
Well, if you take an insurance policy, the insurance company would say that, you know, you've got to notify your beneficiaries and make sure you keep your policy somewhere you can find it. But a couple of things happen. One, people die unexpectedly.
Sure. I've never expected to die. I mean, I expect to someday. I just don't expect it.
I mean, you expect when I get older.
Yes.
But it's amazing. Every year, I'm still not old.
I know. Isn't it amazing? It seems to get farther and farther away.
Exactly. Or people will live so long, you know, their beneficiaries will die.
Oh, geez.
Their initial beneficiaries.
Sure.
And so they won't tell their secondary beneficiaries.
Keep it all updated.
Or they will put something in a safety deposit box and their spouse will die. And then no one knows about the safety deposit box except for the person who is now dead. And so it makes it very difficult for beneficiaries to claim.
I think there needs to be a death app, Craig, so that when you die, and I don't know how, it needs to be alerted so that everybody in your network knows and, the important information where the...
I do not want to help sell the death app. That's just not something I want to be involved. It's a great idea.
I'm going to get a better name. I'm going to get a better name for it.
What
but, where you keep all your important information...
Would it be like a horrible Grim Reaper situation?
No. We'll figure it out. We'll think of a solution here where all the... it's under my bed in a shoebox. Don't forget to check the insurance policy. More with the Illinois State Treasurer, Michael Ferrix, when we come back on 720 WGN. We get all the cool people in our studio. I just learned something very important about the state treasurer of Illinois, Michael Ferrix. He and I were coached the exact same way when we played basketball in grade school. We were both centers for our basketball teams.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense for him, actually. Yeah.
He stopped growing, though. But we were both, because I was the tallest on my team. I was 5'6". I just never grew after that. He apparently continued to grow. What were you told by your coach?
So when I was in fifth grade and I started playing, the coach, I was nearly a head taller than other kids in the class. He said, you don't dribble.
Mm-hmm.
You don't shoot outside. You stay within 5 feet of the basket. You rebound and you score in the paint.
Yes.
And that worked really well when you're taller than everyone else.
Sure.
But then you stop growing and boys catch up and they pass you. And then as a shorter guy on the team, they said, well, Mike, you've got to be a guard. I said, well, no one ever let me dribble.
It's a skill you do have to develop earlier because it's a lot of eye-hand coordination. There's a lot of left
it's
and right.
It's very good being short your whole life for that kind of thing.
He was always a guard. We only have a few minutes left, and I know you wanted to talk about one. Let me ask you about this insurance company that is suing you, the treasurer. You, the treasurer. Your name is on the lawsuit.
Yeah, because we maintain that we're in charge of unclaimed property, money that belongs to people's estate. It's my job to get it back to them, not leave it in some bank or corporation's hands. We said we wanted to come in and audit one company and see if they had people they sold policies to that are dead. Rather than working with me, rather than negotiating with me, they filed a lawsuit and said, we're going to take you to court. And so we're going to fight that out. I believe that when someone faithfully pays their premiums and they have a policy on record, a valid policy, when they die, that money then no longer belongs to the insurance company. It belongs to their loved ones.
Exactly. More with the Illinois State Treasurer, Michael Ferrix, when we come back on 720 WGN. I know it's late and you have to be up early. State Treasurer Michael Ferrix. Before you go, I wanted to ask you about this program that we had a press conference about last year for ABLE. And that's not been set up yet, but it's a program that's nationwide.
We're setting it up right now because it's modeled off of the 529 plans, but there aren't nearly as many parents who are going to be putting money aside for their children with disabilities as parents put aside for college. And so we had trouble getting interest from investment managers. They said the pool is too small, the turnover is too high. And so we brainstormed and said, what can we do to make this happen? What can we do to make sure families aren't paying too high of fees? And we realized we need to grow the state.
Okay.
Well, you can't grow the state.
You can't, yes.
But we talked to other states, smaller states that had problems, and we said, what if we all worked together and we went out and bid for this as if we were one large state? And so we put together a consortium of 10 states now. We're hoping to add some other ones. And now we're going out to investment managers with a pool of 57 million people in these 10 states. And we got a lot more interest, and we think we'll be able to drive down costs. And we did that. They're not all blue states. That's blue states and red states. It's some states are similar to us, Illinois and Iowa, Missouri, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also working with Rhode Island and Alaska, and we're working with Kansas. You know, Kansas State Treasurer and I don't agree on a lot of policy issues, but we agree that this is good policy, and that we could get it done better, lower cost, by working together. And I hope that's a lesson that the General Assembly and the governor learn as well.
Well, that's the thing. If you work together and strive to do the right thing, hopefully the pieces all fall into place. I know that those pieces are very hard to to figure out what goes with what, but we're working on it.
Yeah, the Kansas Treasurer and I, we talked about issues regarding ABLE. There were lots of other things we disagreed on, but we didn't have to talk about those. We put those aside and just focused on what we needed to do to put together a program that would help tens of thousands of families save for their kids, to give them a brighter future.
And those are children
that we could agree on.
And those are families that have children with disabilities, like my family, like many families in the Chicagoland area throughout the state of Illinois. And as weeks go by, I told you off the air, please let us know when you can come back and hang out with us. I told him, Craig, I'm like, I'll bump John Tatey if you want to come on a Tuesday night. You can stop by for Budget Crisis Corner. Who else can we bump? Senator Katowski and the treasurer.
Maybe we won't even bump. We'll just leave people in the green room till you decide you're done.
I like that. That works as well. I have to take a selfie with you, sir, so hang out for just a moment.
We'll do that.
This is Chicago. Oh, by the way, one more time, where can people find out about unclaimed funds or if they want to find out more about your office?
Great. IllinoisTreasurer.gov. IllinoisTreasurer.gov. Click on iCash. Put your own name in there. Put the names of your parents, your in-laws, someone who might have left some money for you, someone you're an heir of, and check for your siblings as well. And then call them up and say, I found money for you.
And it's going to cost you.
And we never charge.
I know where the money is. No, but the siblings might charge. Thank you so much, sir. Appreciate you coming in.
It was a pleasure to be here tonight.
By the way, he came in because he heard Martwick. He's like, if Martwick's on the show, I should certainly be on the show. I love that.